everyone, and welcome to this week's Casterbris podcast with a K. I am Brian Terranerva. Joining me this week was supposed to be Jamie McCrimmon, but he wanted a little too much money, so I've got James McLean. James, how are you?
I am whorishly cheap. Far cheaper than that McCrimmon.
Very true, very true. Christian, however, wanted a bit too much money this week, so he won't be joining us. We've booted him to next week.
But it's a good week to have you back, and a bad week for poor Christian, because it's obviously the first episode of the second part of series 6 of Doctor Who.
Yes. It is sad to not have him here for that, but you know what? I think we'll handle it.
I'm sure.
What do you think? They made it seem like part one ended on this big cliffhanger. They talked about this big cliffhanger, and we talked about in the previous podcast that it didn't really feel like a cliffhanger. It just seemed like a Empire Strikes Back type ending. Mm-hmm. And then we get to this week's episode, and I know you and I are probably going to be opposite ends of the spectrum with this episode, but it didn't necessarily feel like a part two to me. It just kind of felt like the next episode.
Yes, it didn't. It didn't feel connected at all, did it? And
no.
Interesting that it seems that the I'm still not quite sure whether Goodman Goes to War, the idea of this being the Doctor's darkest hour, was still meant to refer to that episode, or whether this and the following part of this series is meant to be part of his darkest hour as well, because this certainly didn't feel like, as you say, it was connected at all to Goodman Goes to War.
Right. Yeah, no, I really do hope that they pick that up somehow, rather than just, I mean, ever since the beginning of the new series, they've kind of thrown out a bunch of grandiose ideas like that and never really followed through completely with them. Not all the time, but I mean, there've been a handful of them that kind of fell short. And I really hope this isn't just another one in a long line of that.
So I don't know. Today, I think this is a kind of interesting situation. And in a way, it's kind of good that it is just two of us, because it gives us a very strong yin and yang, a very big a nice polarity, which three of us would create an imbalance, because Christian, as far as I remember from speaking to him briefly, enjoyed this. He managed to see it as a preview before it was aired, and he enjoyed it. Adam, who did the review for Casterbris, enjoyed it. You yourself enjoyed it as well.
And I did.
For me, this is a real turning point it's not even a turning point. I'm not quite sure whether, if we weren't doing Casterbris, whether I would not watch Doctor Who after this episode, because I really absolutely hated it that much, to the point where I just feel this. I'm very careful at this point, because there's so many people who I've heard over the years go, this show has raped Doctor Who, or, you know, this isn't Doctor Who anymore. And I really resent that sort of thing. Because
right, I was in a forum the other day, yesterday rather, and I saw someone that, you know, they wrote probably the longest post I've ever seen about why Stephen Moffat's a horrible writer and why this episode was awful and everything. And I'll be honest, I'm curious to see what it is that you didn't like, because half of the things that this guy didn't like were things that I sat there and I said, were you watching the same episode as me? Because, you know, all of these explanations, all of these things you didn't like were there within the story.
Right. Well, that's interesting. You know? But yeah, so I mean, I certainly don't want to fall into that sort of category where I am judging my opinion as being a categorical, factual, historical point to put that this is now Doctor Who is terrible and it wasn't before. It is just a personal perspective, but it is a very strong personal perspective. I feel very validated in my personal reasons why I'm not enjoying it, but it's not necessary to say that it is the reasons that everyone should not enjoy it. What I will say before I get all negative as we talk about this, one thing I did really like about this episode is I thought the visuals in it were absolutely stunning. The post-production and the filters and just the sheer colours and the direction. Really, I don't think Doctor Who has ever looked as vibrant. I think Vincent and the Doctor was possibly the only one else that I could put in this category. It has never felt so vibrant as it does now to look at. That was astounding, I thought.
I thought the beginning of A Good Man Goes to War had a similar kind of filmic quality to it, with Rory and the Cybermen there. It really felt like, honestly, it felt like stepping into a Star Wars movie for me, those scenes. And it kind of leapt from TV to movie in those moments. But this story, certainly, it just had I agree with you. The colors, the film technique, everything down to lens flares, even, you know, everything just looked really nice in the story.
But for me, I am really at a position where I have no enjoyment in the show anymore at all. I don't look forward to it. I don't watch when it's on. If I missed it, it wouldn't bother me. And that's me being, I mean, I've always been a little on the fence through these podcasts, in part because I always feel there might be someone connected to the show, even if it's just a grip or, you know, a runner, doesn't matter, right, who might listen to these. You don't want to sort of rubbish something that people have worked very hard on. But for me personally, I have got to a point where I just think this just isn't right in from what I see. And I'm not saying Doctor Who should be a certain way, but for me, I find it abrasively irritating to watch, and that's a shame.
Has that just started with Moffat's era for you, or
no,
was that starting to happen with Russell?
It has happened before. It's happened in various eras. I mean, I won't pretend that it's certainly not a simple Stephen Moffat thing. As I've said many times before, Girl in the Fireplace, Blink, Empty Child, it's the most fantastic bits of Doctor Who have been by Stephen Moffat. So it's not a not technically about him, but it is to do with him. There's no doubt about it. It's his watch. You can't take that away from him for the good or the bad. Rise of the Cybermen was another point where I got to a point with Doctor Who and I was thinking, I don't know if I can actually come back and watch this next week. I was thinking, I am finding Rose and the Doctor just really annoying to watch. I don't sympathize with them. The Doctor I'm beginning to despise because he just seems to puppy dog after this rude, selfish little woman. And the story is this horrible, dull pastiche of the parallel universe. You know, all we're just waiting for is for one of them to be wearing the standard Terran evil moustache beard. You know, I just thought this is just going places that I don't really like. You know, all these minor characters in our world suddenly have to have big positions in the parallel universe to make the story. And I just thought, this is just crap. But I carried on and it got better. And to be quite honest, I can go back to Rise of the Cybermen and actually fairly enjoy it now I accept what it is. So,
you know what? I've felt that a lot about certain stories in the past as well. And some people will probably punch the air when they hear this, I guess. But I can actually even put on Love and Monsters and take some sort of enjoyment from it now, even though I completely despised that episode. It's not one I can watch regularly, but once in a blue moon, it has its moments is the thing. There's some nice elements in there, and then there's a lot of crap elements, unfortunately, that I just still have issues with. But
yes, I know. I can understand why people don't particularly like it. But this, to me, I think is because it epitomized everything I don't like with what Moffat's doing. Now, Moffat does good stuff as well, but this just epitomized all the negative stuff I find with him. And it just... As soon as Mel's appeared at the beginning, I instantly started to hate this episode, and I didn't even know it was going to be River. The crop circle thing really irritated us. I know it was a joke, and I can normally let it go. If that was the only gag, you know, that they spell Doctor by this extremely, very well written map driving to spell Doctor so perfectly. But I could let that go as I could let it go in Russell T. That's something Russell T. Davis would do.
Sure.
And I could say, yeah, it's silly, it's not something I particularly like, but it's a bit of fun. I'm not going to damn you for that. But it was just the whole essence of the episode bugged me. It just feels like, and I'm going to sound very pissy here, it feels like the River Song show.
I can agree. It kind of does feel like the River Song special, and I'm not happy about that. I will say that I wasn't really too into the character when she first appeared in Series 4. When she came back in Series 5, I actually started to like her. But now I'm just thinking, like, okay, why don't you just write a TV show about River Song and forget Doctor Who? Why don't you go do your own science fiction show? So it is a bit much. But at the same time, you know, it's two series, not even two full series. If you look at it, like, not every moment is taken up with her. So it's not even two full series of the show. And then hopefully next year, as he said, it's not really going to be a myth arc. Heavy story, yeah. You know, get a bunch of standalones. So maybe it's not so bad that we're getting the storyline, because it is, I will admit, it is an interesting character idea. And I did, like I said, in Series 5, start to like her. And the more complex he's making it, the more interested I'm actually becoming in it. And unlike you, I mean, when Mel's first arrived on the scene, like you, I guess I should say, I kind of thought, I don't like this character. And I know that we put up on the K, could this be a new future companion thing? Because they were trying to keep it so quiet and everything. And the second I saw her on screen, I just said, please God, no. Because she is too much. Like, I mean, Ace was a cool, ballsy character, you know, but she played it cool. Like, this girl was just, like, obnoxious. But when she regenerated into River, it made me realize what good casting she was, because clearly she played it just like Alex Kingston did. She played that character the same.
Yes, there was that.
You know, and so while she wasn't exactly the most likable, most interesting character to come on the scene and somebody I really didn't want to see there, it just went back and it was like, damn it, you know what? They did well. They did really well. They got this actress who just studied her, did exactly her. And I know after regenerations, people aren't usually supposed to be the same, but River's not normal, you know, and that's fine. I can get that. This character of River apparently is just, that's who she is in her lifespan. And I found that very interesting. And it was a nice lead into the story for me. It was an interesting thing. Like, I liked the idea that the Doctor was out there in the universe trying to find Mel and a Melody and having no luck whatsoever. And there she just shows up on his doorstep.
But again, you know? this is what gets me. And a lot of shows do this and they don't seem to see the damage it does. Or in my opinion, the damage it does is that if the show is not about a certain character, that certain character shouldn't dominate the show. And I actually started to warm more to River in the last part of this series, where she played a little more of a supporting role, where the show wasn't all about her, where she wasn't in control, where she wasn't hiding the spoilers. And suddenly she became a little better, and Alex Kingston actually became a lot more likable. And it just doesn't feel right to me to have a character who isn't the central character of this show control the show so much. And, you know, as you say, that is essentially what the character is doing at the moment. And I think that is what I find. And they do all act very well. I mean, I think that's a point that's got to be taken on board, is the acting throughout is very, very strong. I mean, I know I sometimes have Absolutely. A little jab at Karen, but even, you know, there was nothing there that which made me think. I just felt that there was this very smug, forced character which was just taking it over and playing every scene. And I was just thinking, I'm just tired of it. I think that's what it was. It was just like this episode was the straw that broke the camel's back. I sat down to try to hopefully to watch an interesting story that somehow involved Hitler, that somehow involved the Doctor, somehow involved slight movement in this arc, and then find that it's just all about River Song. Hitler's put in a cupboard at the beginning and then forgotten. And it's just all about River. And I was just like, I'm tired of this character forced in my face, who isn't the Doctor, who seems to get more screen time than the Doctor in these sort of episodes, and saves the Doctor, beats the Doctor, steals from the Doctor, stops the Doctor, is better than the Doctor.
Yeah, but you could argue that Russell did that with Rose. When she first came on the scene in Series 1, like I had said, as much as I was enjoying the show in Series 1, I said they might as well have just called it Rose Who, because the Doctor never really saved the day. It was always Rose doing things, and she was always in the foreground, and she was always the main event. It just seems to be their stamp. Like, the Doctor is there, and I agree, he needs to be used more. He needs to be a bit more central, but they've made the supporting characters stronger than they ever were in the past before. So now they're telling drama the way modern drama is told, and that is with multiple characters, not just the one central character, like Doctor Who used to be, where the Doctor did everything and the companions just asked the questions. I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing, because like I said, you know, look at next week's episode. Obviously, River's not going to be there. She wasn't in every episode since the start of Series 5. We did have breaks from her, but when she is in, I mean, they made her up to be this over-the-top character, so if they start dulling her down now, it's just not going to work. I mean, they're going to get to a point where maybe she won't show up anymore, and that's fine with me. But right now, I don't think it's necessarily... While I do think it's a bit too River-centric, at the same time, I'm kind of enjoying it. When she's in, I do think the stories are interesting. I do think they're fun. Like I said, I like learning about her just as much as I wish that we could have learned more about Jack's missing 2 years when they introduced him and they never went anywhere with it. And I feel it was a disappointment. And I feel that this is kind of in some ways making up for that to me. But with Hitler, I agree. I had wanted to see kind of the Doctor and companions trapped in some kind of Nazi situation with Hitler and in a really bad, you know, remove sci-fi element from the story. Just make No, I don't want to say it that way. Not remove sci-fi element. Time travel is a sci-fi element. That is not just the tool that brings you to the story. That you know, it is the tool, brought them to the story, yes, but that is all the sci-fi you need. They get caught up with Hitler. All they have to do is just try and not screw up history now. You know, and especially even if they wanted to bring River Song in it, they just have to stop River from screwing up history. They could have done something really interesting. But at the same time, giving the episode this grand title, Let's Kill Hitler, putting in this you know, huge historical, horrible person into the story, and then turning him into a joke and locking him into a cupboard and forgetting about him for the rest of the story, in some ways, to me, it was extremely funny because everybody was expecting to see this Hitler spectacle. And instead, I thought it was funny. I just thought it was really well used. And I thought, like, there's two ways you could go with this. You could make it completely Hitler-centric. You could make him be this evil, you know, this evil bastard. You could make him be doing whatever that he does and have the Doctor and friends have to try and survive that. Or you can just make a joke out of somebody who thought so much of himself and wish that, you know, he's somewhere watching it right now and say, hey, look, this is what we thought of you. You know what I mean? Like, it was kind of neat to me in a way.
I think Rose was overplayed. But then to a certain degree, Rose was still playing the cipher for the audience. As the young audience was watching the Doctor, through the Rose, they were sort of seeing themselves integrate into this universe. There was a sort of logic behind it, which began pretty much with Ace. In Sylvester McCoy's era, in sort of pushing the audience cipher to the front and the Doctor a little to the back. I don't agree that it was always very successful with Rose, and I certainly agree that sometimes she irritated the pants off me to the point, as I said, I almost stopped watching.
The whole storyline right now is revolving around the fact that somebody kills the Doctor. You know, River killed somebody, somebody kills the Doctor. It seems like the two are connected in some way, and maybe they're not. But it's sounding like it's the River spectacle, it's the River show, and you know, the Doctor is not in any way a part of it. But at the heart of this whole mystery, this whole situation, we're not necessarily trying to find out who River is anymore. We know who River is now. There's a couple little mysteries surrounding her, but the main mystery is, who did kill the Doctor? Does he really die? It is still very much centric to the Doctor, in that every character is now focusing in on the Doctor, everybody, including the humans on that android spaceship. You know, Amy and Rory are still focusing in on that. River is now even focusing in on that. She saved his life, you know, and the Doctor now knows about his own death. It is still very central to the Doctor. It's just these things are happening around him. And River is just one of the things that's happening around him. She comes in and she's a show stealer. You know, no argument there. She definitely is. But, you know, they keep giving the Doctor great moments as well. Look at the scene in Let's Kill Hitler when she thought she was being clever and picked up the gun, you know, without anybody even noticing her. The Doctor was two steps ahead of her every time, every situation in that, right up until she finally did get the final blow with the kiss, the poison kiss. But that was good because it is an interesting thing to play off on the fact that, you know, that's a side of the Doctor that we don't often get to see. He can think about the mind, with, you know, this intelligent mind all the way up to it, but he doesn't think about the love angle.
But you see, that is the problem for me, is that I knew immediately, as soon as they started that, who can top the other, I knew that he would lose. Because to me, that writing with her is so predictable that she always has to top everyone. And that, I think, is part of what frustrates me, is because it becomes almost predictable. But I'm also kind of gratified, as I've always said to people in these sort of situations, just because I hate it doesn't mean I want everyone else to hate it. And if you actually sat and you watched it and you enjoyed it, I actually envy you. I don't think you're wrong. I envy you for actually getting that experience where I didn't.
Well, that's the thing with any kind of story, is that, you know, everybody takes something different from the same story. And you know, we all have our interests. You and I have talked a lot before about how we both enjoy Farscape. And it's interesting that we seem like we're taking a lot of the same things from Farscape. It has that kind of sci-fi element that we in some way both enjoy.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I do enjoy with sci-fi is when time travel gets brought into it. I love when people play with time travel rather than just the way Doctor Who used to do it a lot in the past, which was just, okay, we're now in 1946, and that's our time travel element. Now the story is just going to be here. I like what Moffat's doing with the twisting and bending and warping of time. I think that stuff is so cool, and it's probably because I have a mind for following it. And I'm not saying that, you know, people who don't aren't intelligent or anything like that. It's just some people have a catalog kind of mind where they can follow it or they enjoy following it.
Yeah.
And I certainly do enjoy that. So it's interesting. I mean, like you can have similar interests with somebody, but then at some point the show that you like can veer off in one
Absolutely.
Path that we're not going to like. And there's many things throughout the entire run of Doctor Who that I wasn't too interested in, that a lot of my friends absolutely just went nuts over just because they loved it so much.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, that's the interesting thing. And right now, the stories are talking to a bit more to a certain part of the audience, whereas before they were talking a lot more to a different part of the audience. And hopefully there's people in between who are just still sitting there going, all of this stuff is just fun. Even if they don't like your grandmother, don't get it fully, completely. You know, there's still an interesting story being told there, even if you're not following the mind-bending, time-twisting stuff.
I must say, I do actually admire a lot of the mind-bending, mind-twisting stuff. I mean, watching this, I mean, I sometimes feel frustrated that the way that River has been deployed into these stories, because I think the whole, I know there's a lot of parallels, things like the Time Traveler's Wife. It is a very interesting concept to see people see people's continuity taken out of continuity and you follow it through another person's continuity. I mean, that's an absolutely fascinating bit of fiction to work on. I just think the sad thing is the way that, for me, how River is written is narratively very invasive. And unfortunately, I don't personally, and again, it's a personal feeling, I don't think Alex Kingston is charming enough or has the chemistry enough to pull off the position that she comes in. She comes across as a sort of like a slightly uncomfortable, mature auntie at a party who would come over to you and actually thinks they're more sexy than they are and that you should feel it too. And you're thinking, oh, you're a nice person, but really, don't do that. It's a bit weird.
I won't argue with that, but I'll tell you what, I know a couple of people who do feel that she is like absolutely the most sexy thing.
I mean, I replied on Facebook to a writer that I'm good friends with, and the next reply after me was someone who said totally the opposite, a lady who said, I loved it. I think River Song is awesome.
Right.
But maybe we're going on too long. As I say, I totally agree with you. I think it's something you either love or you hate. And I am glad that we've had an opportunity to have two sides vying for, you know, opinions. I think that's important.
Now, let's see how our opinions differ for Torchwood.
Indeed.
Right. Like they're going to be that different. I've got to time travel back another week, though, don't I?
I know you do. So while you're doing that, if you want to give River a slap on the head as you pop past her, as I'm sure she's on her way somewhere else.
No problem. I could do that for you.
Thank you.
How about you kind of remind me what that episode was about, since you just watched it?
It was probably the most Torchwood-y of all the Torchwood episodes of Miracle Day we've had so far, where it's very much the flashback to Jack's period prior to the Great Depression.
Yes.
And revealing possibly the major antagonist, I don't know yet, of this story. Very different in a lot of ways, very different in the way it was filmed, the way the flashbacks were filmed, very different from a character perspective. So I think I feel I've dribbled on far too much on the Doctor Who. Would you like to dribble on a little about this episode of Torchwood?
Yeah, you know, I will actually say that this week, your this week's Torchwood, not my this week's Torchwood,
of course,
was actually seemingly a turning point for me. They kind of brought it back to close to the Children of Earth level, which is kind of sad because it's good because you're glad that it's there, but it's sad because it happens so late within the series. But I thought it was pretty well told. I thought it was going somewhere good. I do think the whole Gwen turning on Jack kind of upset me a bit, just because, I mean, I understand it's her family and everything, but you'd think that, you know, her being who she is and knowing what Torchwood does and her blundering into every situation that she's blundered into in Miracle Day would have thought, let's go save my family, or, you know, even just telling Jack. To me, I think that scene would have been much wiser had she gone in and said, they have my family, they want you, I need your help. And Jack just said, let's go. You know, because I believe that would have happened. I don't believe that she needed to kidnap him. I don't believe she needed to stun him. I don't believe that she needed to force him to do anything. I think he would have just gone and done it.
Yeah.
You know, and that was the only jarring moment for me so far. Otherwise, it was pretty good. Everybody, even Rex and Esther kind of seemed like they were all of a sudden efficient, you know, and on the ball. You know, they saw something was odd about Jack and Gwen, and rather than just sitting there going, well, they're oddballs, let's just sit here and, I don't know, throw our names out on the internet. Hey, why don't we put our address out online as well? No, they actually did something useful, you know, and it worked out well. Jack's past, it was neat to get a little bit more of Jack's history. They're kind of really making him seem older than I ever really actually thought the character was meant to be. But it is interesting. So I thought the story was well told. It was strong. There was less joking or ridiculous moments. There was less inept situations with the exception of Gwen. You know, I really just think that situation was poorly written.
Gwen is still a big problem for me. It just didn't feel right. It just felt awkward. And I just really don't know where they want that character to go. I don't. I think what gets me about it, and why it didn't ring true, thinking about it as I'm talking to you now, is that she has never shown in the past this notion that if she capitulates with an antagonist, that she will get what she wants. I don't imagine that she would believe that her family would almost definitely be safe. I don't know. It just felt a bit rushed. As for the flashbacks, I thought they were good, but... And I do have a but. I did find myself starting to chat through them, which seemed to imply to me that they weren't holding my attention. And I think the romance bits, plus the sexual scenes, they just felt a little too butter spread, thickly spread, to the point that they were overlong and a little dreary, and I started to lose interest. So I think there was a problem there. I think that was oversold.
The other thing is all these things we talked about, the show trying to keep a serious nature and, you know, during these times and trying to keep the jokey moments light, or even, you know, the day that Rex and Jack both went out and, you know, found someone to drown their sorrows in, essentially. You know, they kind of felt a little bit out of place during the situation. But the one thing that we're just not seeing is Jack being Jack. You know, he's just not meeting people. And like Esther, you'd think that he would have met Esther and totally just like flirted up a storm with her, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, we just didn't necessarily see that. And it's just kind of odd. I mean, I guess Jack's been through a lot and this situation is different. And maybe they're realizing that. But if they're realizing it there, why aren't they realizing it for the overall story? You know, why are they letting Gwen down so bad? Why are they letting the Torchwood team down so bad? You know, it's tough. It's tough. It's tough right now to say that Torchwood is doing anything great.
Here's a question on the Torchwood front. At this point, if I was a new viewer, would you would undoubtedly probably remember the fact that Jack is the only mortal character in the story. Mm-hmm. Would you at this point still remember the fact that he was meant to be an immortal before it? Has that been built up enough at this point?
You know what? That's a very good question. As a new viewer going into Miracle Day,
yeah,
the only way that they ever actually built that into the story prior to this one episode was by making Jack mention that he doesn't think he's immortal anymore.
Yeah.
They didn't give us a moment where you actually threw it in the audience's face that Jack couldn't die. And they probably should have done that early on rather than just make him realize these little subtleties, because they are trying to sell it to a new audience and they're writing it as if they're writing it for the same old audience.
Yeah.
Is the way it seems. Until this episode, when you see Jack die multiple deaths, it's the first time that you actually get this glimpse that he was an immortal man. And you're right. They did poorly play that. So I don't think that would have been the case. I think they should have, in the first episode, before the miracle happened, they should have even just shown, you know, Jack back in some way doing something and
die. Which is my next question. Should some of this flashback been in episode one? should they perhaps, could that have been, I mean, obviously not just stuck in there, but should episode one have dealt with a bit of this backstory early on and thus been able to show what Jack was?
I actually thought about this immediately after watching the episode, and I thought these flashbacks should have been back as far as episode one. And I think what they should have done is not thrown them in to make you sit there and realize that these moments were important. I think that they should have been flashbacks that kind of, you know, built up the character, not just Jack, but was it Angelo?
Yeah.
Built up Angelo as well. Just throw it in there. Show that Jack can die these multiple deaths so the audience see that Jack is this older-than-life character, and then cut to, like, modern day. Mm-hmm. You know, this way you're getting the audience to already realize that the basic main character of the show is somebody special. Yeah. And then this odd reversal of events is going to happen where he becomes somebody, you know, he becomes the norm while everybody else becomes special. But they should have shown that. And what they should have done was shown that flashback in such a way that they were trying to focus on the fact that, hey, audience, guess what? Here's a character that can't die already. And then the world is going to change and no one's going to be able to die except this guy. And then later on, by the time they got to this episode, show bits of the flashback that we didn't see before and show why those things that we saw earlier were actually way more important than we thought they were. They should have been a way to introduce the audience to Jack and his immortality, but they should have been introducing us to this triumvirate. They should have been introducing us to Angelo, and they should have been introducing us to the overall story that's going on without us even realizing that that's what they were doing. They would have solved so many issues by doing that.
Okay, so sitting on my swivel chair, stroking my hairy pussy in the best affectionate homage to Are You Being Served and Blofeld in one, here's my next question to you.
Yes.
Russell T. Davis was very smart with Rose. Torchwood, Miracle Day, Philip Seagal. Has Torchwood, Miracle Day fallen for the same mistake that Seagal and the McGann movie made in 1996? Has it over-concentrated on the old fans rather than trying to do what Russell T. Davis did so well with Doctor Who?
Okay.
With Rose.
I don't think that it went down the road as Philip Seagal. The reason I say that is because Philip Seagal threw continuity in your face. Said this is the character. He's got 13 lives. This is what a police box is. This is what this is. This is Sonic Screwdriver. Everything. He just threw it all at you. Torchwood Miracle Day. It just went, here's the next series of Torchwood. Oh, by the way, Americans, we're going to give it to you for the first time in your face. Hope you understand it. You know, they didn't bother to try and sell it to an audience. You would think if they went down the road Philip Seagal went down, they would have thrown Jack's immortality. They would have thrown Gwen there. They probably would have gave us, you know, talked about Yanto till they were blue in the face, you know. Mm-hmm. They would have just talked continuity, 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 where there is a happy medium, you know, which clearly we saw with Rose. You know, slowly give the audience what they need to see, even in the first episode alone. Now, we didn't learn everything about the Doctor. We didn't know about regeneration since the first episode. We didn't know, you know, half of the details about the Doctor since the first episode, but you gave enough of the audience to make them go, this is interesting, I want more, and still let them know what they needed to know in order to proceed. Miracle Day should have given us a bit of Jack and his history and a bit of the Miracle Day mystery. And like I said, without us realizing what was going on, whereas instead they just went business as usual. Philip Seagal said, new audience, new characters. I have to tell you everything in the space of 20 minutes. I can do it.
So one final question I think on Torchwood I'm going to pose to you. My white pussy is getting restless, cat.
Yes.
The end of the episode, and obviously you have some experience of the future.
I do.
The end smug comment by the character that Nana Visitor was playing with, and very unusual haircut, I must say. Was there any point in capturing Jack through this elaborate method if she genuinely felt that Jack would want to have come in the first place by himself?
Yeah. Honestly, I think what should have happened was they should have, since they knew that Gwen had those contact lenses, they probably should have made contact through her and said, we need you to get a message to Jack. Clearly, Gwen, even if she doesn't believe the message, is going to deliver the message. You know? I mean, that's all that, you know, hey, I got a message through the contact lenses. Weird, I know. But this is what they said. You know, they didn't need to threaten Gwen if they wanted to make themselves... Okay, and I'm trying not to say too much about the next episode, but if they wanted to make themselves known that they weren't a threat, you know, they could have done this a bit better than actually kidnapping her family, pissing her off, and making her then piss Jack off. You know, I think it would have been much better if they had actually just found a better medium. I mean, they had the technology to actually talk to her contact lenses and track her down, which admittedly isn't that hard when you're traveling to... you know, Wales and telling everybody who you are. But clearly they could have found another way to actually tell Jack and make it be a less threatening situation when it really wasn't a threatening situation at all. But then what kind of story would you have had there?
Right.
You know, actually, I shouldn't say that. It probably would have been a much more interesting story. But I think in terms of TV execs, they were sitting there going, we want drama. We want action.
Yeah, I imagine that's the case. And my white pussy is now getting curious and has one more question.
Okay.
Episode 8, just very, very briefly, because we're well over time.
Yes.
Do you think it's better or worse for UK viewers to look forward to? Is it something they should be excited for?
Do you know what? I actually found it better.
Good.
It'll be interesting to hear what you and Christian think about it, but I actually feel like it was finally starting to find its feet, as I said, with episode 7. But episode 8, it didn't necessarily go in the direction I think that you're kind of expecting. And at the same time, I thought it was, well told and started to actually give us a proper story and a proper direction. So I liked it, and I liked where it was heading, and, even kind of liked where it ended, to be honest, to see where it's going to go next. So hopefully it doesn't become a letdown, but I kindly think they finally found their Children of Earth feat. And I hope that's the case, but I liked it. I thought it was well done.
Brilliant. That's an encouraging and positive note to end, I think, this podcast on.
We won't be back next week talking to you, but you can listen to us talking to someone else, and we'll be back the week after that. Have a good one. Enjoy. See you all later.